SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, at the races on this Monday, big weekend, and I just sent out a thank you to Walter Blum Jr. and Romero Meraz address on Twitter if you want to send him a nice note and encourage his recovery. Johnny D joining us now from Express Bet, and Johnny's trying to recover from last night's epic. Epic snooze fest. Good morning,
Stevie. How are you? I got plenty of sleep last night. Started about 7:30.
I was
trying to explain to my wife Gail, who watches a lot of football with me. She knows a little bit, and I was trying to explain to her how, you know, each year, the Super Bowl, we expect it to be this amazing show. And it's actually, I mean, it's the two best teams, you know, in quotes, but it's actually just another football game. And you're going to have stinkers. Now, that thing last night was way past stinker, but you're going to have boring games because, you know, think on a regular Sunday, let's see, we have 32 teams, 16 games. Well, a regular week, you have 16 games. How many of them are real barn burners? You know, you notice the ones that are barn burners, but there's another 10 that aren't really that entertaining. So it can happen. And I also tried to explain to her that if you're a defensive-minded person, if you're really into defense, you could gain an appreciation for the way those two teams defended each other. They really did things, particularly the final interception that kind of sealed the game for the Rams, I mean for the Patriots, the blitz on that play. The perfect time, the perfect call, executed perfectly. And so I was trying to explain to her, you know, a defensive-minded person could find some enjoyment in it, but not a lot. Because the offenses just didn't see. I mean, Goff, the quarterback for the Rams, he looked lost all night. You know, he's a young player. He's got time to mature and develop. But even Brady was not on. That was not an on-Brady performance by any means. He threw one incredibly beautiful pass to Gronkowski, set up the touchdown. But for the most part, hitting Edelman, I could have hit Edelman the times he was open. He was so far open that, you know, I could have got the ball there. But other than that, that game. So even though you could find some enjoyment in the defensive strategy, on the other hand, the offenses weren't really executing either. So it was one we'll put down in the books as one to forget.
It was stupefying. I got to tell you. And then there was that absolute hideous mess of a halftime show, which brought nothing to it. I mean, maybe we're just spoiled. Maybe because last year was so special to us, maybe that contributes to the. But there were so many things that just weren't working. Not to mention the Tony Romo genius that was the build up to the game was equaled only by the speculation that we were going to hear, you know, the most insightful commentary in the history of Super Bowl punditry. And my favorite of his was the reference that both teams were tied. That was the one that, to me, that's both teams were tied.
I share your frustration in the buildup, you know, before the game, the Tony Romo buildup, like, you know, and what, look, CBS is happy. He's been a fine for them because it's interesting because he's brought something to the game that a lot of, this is the case with horse racing broadcasts too. There's a little crossover here because forever on these Kentucky Derby shows or all the Triple Crown shows and Breeders' Cup, we hear networks say, well, it's not, the fans are not our audience. We're trying to get people who don't follow, who watch once a year, so we can't go too technical on the broadcast. Well, we heard that about football for a long time, too. But now a lot of critics are, you know, propping Romo up for his insightful understanding and explanation of what's going on during the game as far as what the defense is doing and what the play that should react. Well, that's really, it's pretty much inside football stuff, the way he's whipping through it. And it probably is a lot for many people, but there's an audience for that. I mean, he's being lauded as, you know, the greatest thing since John Madden. And that's quite an honor in your second year of broadcasting. But I think that to the bigger point is maybe the networks can find out that, you know, you can speak more nuts and bolts handicapping discussions on these broadcasts for each race that you're showing. You don't need to dumb it down for everyone. You can still do the fashion and all of it, but you don't need to dumb down the broadcasts and have it be vanilla when you could have it be Spumoni.
There you go. I just couldn't help.
One other thing. His pointing out of the declining the penalty, that was really good, because for him to latch on to that at the moment, I didn't know if it was the right call or not to decline that penalty. I wasn't sure in my mind, but I was interested in what he was saying and how quickly he went down that road. And I don't think the Rams went down that road as quickly as Tony Romo did, because when they finally, I don't know if everyone remembers, it was very late in the game. New England was driving. There was a penalty on New England, and rather than push them back and let them redo the down, Romo suggested that the Rams decline the penalty and waste that down, but the yardage, they wouldn't give up the yardage. Now, they were closing in on a field goal. I don't know what the right call was. And Belichick, he was irate, because it seemed like the referees did one thing, and then the Rams maybe realized, or maybe they didn't get the word in quick enough, whatever, I don't know. But they then declined the penalty. So I thought that was a really good highlight. You know what the highlight of the game was? That hit in the first quarter that was called an illegal hit. That was a great, fair hit in my mind.
Yep.
And I really did not agree with that penalty at all. And, you know, if you take that out of football, look, I'm not, I don't enjoy watching violence. I can't watch MMA. I stopped watching boxing. You know, these guys are wearing, they're finely tuned. And I know about the head injuries and everything, but that hit was not. I don't know.
Yep.
And then they bring in the ex-official, to give his unbiased view. Anyway, I could keep going about the NFL, but I won't.
Well, I just, I had to bring it up with you. You're my go-to guy, and it is, of course, a year ago today that the greatest Super Bowl game in history was played, and certainly by comparison, last year's game was wildly entertaining compared to just endlessly entertaining.
And by the way, the Philadelphia Eagles remain the last NFC team to score a touchdown in the Super Bowl.
Yes. That's true. That's true. Zach Ertz's touchdown is holding up here a year later. Well,
I saw a great thing on Twitter today. It said touchdown Super Bowl touchdown passes. Trey Burton 1, Jared Goff 0.
It's pretty good.
And then they did the receptions, of course, and had Foles down 1, and the entire Ram offense 0.
Unbelievable.
That's what you watch, because it's fun, even though sometimes it's boring.
Well, let's shift our gears into the action. And, you know, the one obvious tie, actually, to racing that and handicapping, Johnny, that can be mentioned with last night's game was, you know, the expectation of a track meet and a you know, high scoring game, something, you know, in the 50s or more and the overs. And yet, you know, that's really something that we see on a daily basis when we have a certain expectation of how a race might unfold. And either it goes much faster than expected or much slower. And you get that on a daily basis. And it really, I thought that was the obvious parallel over the weekend, of course, between the jackpot force out at Santa Anita and everything else, the high profile 3-year-old races, the terrific McKinsey and Battle of Midway shoulder to shoulder duel, really a pretty satisfying race weekend overall.
Yeah. You know, your point about seeing things go awry daily. How about every half hour? We don't have to wait for another day.
Yeah, exactly.
Turn the page and wait for the next race, which about, you know, I mean, if you bet the over in that game, in the Super Bowl, and I know no one wagers on the NFL, but if someone did have, you know, a side bet with their friend on the over in the Super Bowl, they were pretty sure by halftime, or at the end of the first quarter, that they were in trouble by halftime, deep trouble. And you know, but when we're wrong in racing, we just turn the page because we get to do it all over again. Right away. We don't have to wait, you know, another whole season now. But, yes, you're right. This weekend, it was a fun weekend. Fun weekend of racing. It always amazes me when the 3-year-olds start in earnest. And I think I would say this is it. This weekend is it. You got the Bob Lewis at Santa Anita, Holy Bull in Florida, and the Withers in New York. This is 3 races, north, south, west, that kind of kick things, get things rolling. I know there's been a couple beforehand, but this really is the real kickoff. And the San Pasquale, what a great way. Battle of Midway and McKenzie, that, as you said, awesome race between those two. And I really, obviously, the way the 3-year-old races, I'll talk about those in a second, but I think there was more to observe in the San Pasquale. It was a more entertaining race from my point of view because of the way Pratt rode Battle of Midway. You've got McKenzie inside. You have an idea that McKenzie's got more speed, and Baffert horses usually don't take back. It's very rarely that Baffert horses take back. They're usually, if they're not on the lead, they're very close to the lead. And so, you know, coming out of the outside, McKenzie, Battle of Midway is going to have to be outside or take back and drop over and try and save ground. But what Pratt had confidence in his horse, he went and he laid right on McKenzie. And neither one of them really seemed to be too concerned with Giant Expectations, who's setting the pace. They were more concerned with each other. And certainly Pratt, you know, just laid right on Smith. And if Smith would creep away, Pratt would ask Battle of Midway to just, you know, stay right with him. And as they turned in the stretch and through the stretch, you wonder for a minute who was going to get it done, because they were both moving well, both finishing well. And, you know, Battle of Midway just is better right now. He looked him in the eye, and he went by. And now what was interesting to me was Mike Smith on McKenzie, he avoided hitting McKenzie. He was hand-riding him all through the lane. And my guess is that he felt like McKenzie was giving him everything he had. And I think McKenzie resents being hit. I don't think he likes the stick. So it was interesting to watch Smith. And if you get a chance to watch the head-on, you'll see he draws his stick, but he doesn't use it. You know, he keeps hand-riding McKenzie. Then finally, he gives him a whack. And you see McKenzie, you know, flips his tail. Like we've seen him do now, you know, since he was a 2-year-old. You see, he swishes that tail. Like, if body language means anything, he doesn't like to be hit. So then I read the comments that Smith says, well, maybe I should have taken him back. Maybe I should have taken McKenzie back. I don't get that. I don't see how that would work. But you know, I'm sure Mike Smith knows a lot more than I do, but I can't imagine how that would work, him having to run down a Battle Midway through the lane. I don't – maybe he responds to chasing another horse, but I don't think so. I think Battle of Midway was just the better horse on this day. But it was really interesting watching the replay, watching Mike ride McKenzie and the outstanding ride Pratt put on. It takes a lot of confidence. Because he was three, four wide the whole way on Battle of Midway. But Pratt had in his mind, that's the horse to beat. I'm going to lay right on him. I'm going to take the battle to him, and we're going to see who's better in the lane. And it worked out. It takes a lot of confidence as a jockey in yourself as well as in your horse. To ride a race like that, to latch on to the favorite and say, my horse is better than this horse today. And this is what I'm going to do because of where I'm drawn. This is how I have to ride this race. So I thought that was interesting. And then also staying at Santa Anita, I thought Mucho Gusto ran a really nice race. Because Talamo had to take him back, or he broke a little slow, and he ended up being back a bit, and the sloppy track, and I think he loved the slop. I will say that, because he handled it really well. But it's also getting the slop in your face that is an issue when the track is wet. And he seemed to handle that pretty well, and at the finish, through the stretch, he was striding out nicely, very well. He was really striding out. And his ears were going back and forth, and he looked as effortless, you know, as it could be. Now, I think he really likes the slop, because the way he was striding out, he was not afraid of slipping at all. There was no, he wasn't tentative at all. He was taking full, big, beautiful strides. So that's good. He's got speed. Distance doesn't appear to be a problem. We can hold out, you know, what that distance is. And I thought Gunmetal Gray ran okay. I would not be disappointed if I owned him in his performance. He had no real pace to chase. He kind of needs a certain kind of race for his best. But guess what? They're going to get that later down the road. He's going to get that kind of race as the distances increase. The competition deepens, he's going to get those kinds of races down the road. But he's up against it because he really doesn't have any early speed. But I thought he ran well. And then the cut that he looked like he grabbed a quarter in the race. It was bleeding. But Hollendorfer says it's nothing. It's superficial. Let's see if he loses any training time to that. You know how I feel about three-year-olds losing training time. Let's see, you know, how quickly he can bounce back from that. The Holy Bull, you know, going in, I had concerns about Maximus Mischief. I didn't like the way, I don't know, he missed the work or there was rain and they didn't, just the comments about his work pattern and Reed, it's trainer Reed said, well, it was good enough. He doesn't need much. And it wasn't really encouraging. Plus, the New York race was slow early. He took advantage of things. He looked like he was a little bit tired at the finish. I was against him, but I couldn't come up with the winner. I missed the pick six because of it. 5 out of 6. They only paid $21,000, but I could have had Harvey. I mean, if you're looking at a race where there's speed, and that's the other thing, the race had other speed in it. It looked like it was going to be a pretty quick pace. Harvey Wallbanger's, his record is good. I mean, okay, a little slow maybe, but it's figured to set up for that kind of closing charge. And if you felt that Maximum Mischief is not quite 100%, or his training has been interrupted a little bit, or you have distance concerns, or whatever, that's the kind of horse you should go to. And so I thought that was, I can criticize New England and Los Angeles for their play on Sunday, and I criticize my performance on Saturday. And the Withers, I didn't think that was much at all. I got to turn the page on that one.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, that you'd say that. It we'll talk to Danny Gargan next, and you know, from a fig standpoint, it graded out best of the three. With the Saturday boys races, both came back slow, and we'll see if they hurry up a little. Butchie, you mentioned Butch Reed, and Butch said that he was surprised at how much Maximus Mischief was blowing coming back. That he just may have been fooled a little bit, and you know that happens. I mean, you got the horse out there, you know, working and doing the daily exercise, and you know, coming back, and you know, the proverbial wouldn't blow out a match comment. But then you know, in race conditions, and he just. He was kind of just grinding it out. He didn't have that same. He wasn't running with the same authority that we had seen. That was the difference. It seemed on Saturday. So they'll try to regroup. You know, Johnny. Let's go back to Santa Anita for a minute. Did you go after the distribution in the jackpot there?
I think it's in my contract that I have to go after the payouts. yes, I did. And I crushed it. I mean, what are you going to do? You had 6 winners. I think it paid 2-something. I think I had it twice. But I think I put 2 into it. So, yeah. I mean, this happened the last time we had a mandatory payout at Santa Anita, chalked out, and I said I was happy because happy for the people who got to hit it, because it gets the idea is you can pick 6. You can pick 6 winners. And there is some, booby prize in saying I can pick 6 winners, but if they're all favorites or they're all close to favorites and it doesn't pay anything, you know, it's like the tree in the forest thing. If you pick 6 winners and it pays $200, did you really pick 6 winners? If the tree falls in the forest and no one hears it, did it really fall? You know, it was one of those things. I mean, it's just the way it came up, the rainy day. Not the best situation on any level. No one was happy with the way it went, the way it fell. you know, it's, look, there are benefits to having these huge monster pools on certain days, and there sure are, you know, barriers to that turning out to be as great as it should have been. Now, am I in favor of either pick six, if you ask me, the rainbow or the pick, the $2 pick six, the traditional $2 pick six? I could argue strongly both ways. I could really, you know, I could play the prosecution or the defense, either way you want to go, because I think they both have favorable qualities. What I will say, though, is I think the Rainbow Six at Gulfstream works better because of the size of the field you're dealing with and the uncertain appearing turf races. You're going to get that 30-1 shot every once in a while, or in the same day, you're going to get 2 30-1 shots or 3 that end up having a single ticket. But at Santa Anita, the big guys, I don't know if they're still, you know, playing big tickets. I assume they are because, you know, the thing pays pretty well on the days when it's hit, but it's not all chalk. I mean, it actually pays pretty well, both at Gulfstream and Santa Anita. So, I don't know. You can, but definitely Saturday, the rain really hurt things all the way around, from the horse player, the track, the horses, the trainers. Everybody was, you know, no one's happy when that happened. The funniest thing, though, is watching social media, the people who live in Southern California, and I lived there for 30 years, so I know of which I speak. They freak out when it rains. It's like the end of the world.
Yeah, and everybody made out. I saw where Brad Free had collated some of the comments, and I'm quite content to see this pay 300 and there be I think I saw 18,000 successful tickets. I'd rather that money spread out, and you know, this did pay three times the parlay. The parlay was 106, and the thing paid just under 300, 296.30. So it paid just under three times the parlay. And I
think I saw it with a positive expectation.
Absolutely. Of course it was.
Yeah.
Of course it was.
Yeah.
So I like this result as opposed to what, you know, very well could happen on Saturday at Gulfstream, where, you know, it's 12 by 12 by 14 by 12 by 11 by 14, and you know, it you get three idiotic horses that were impossible on paper, and you know, and six people that, you know, that bought the thing win. That to me does the industry no good.
I understand where you're coming from. Unless I'm one of the six people, then I think that's fine. that's handicapping. That's the challenge. That's the, you know, it's kind of what we do is that there are a couple of big price winners. You know, we're supposed to either recognize those races are wide open races and go as deep as possible, which, by the way, I told you Saturday I had 5 out of 6 in the Rainbow Six at Gulfstream.
Right.
And it paid 21,000. Now they had two bombers. There was a bomber in the first race, I think it was 30-1, that I had, or 25-1 that I had, and only because I felt the race was a wide open race and I spread the net. And with 20 cent increments, I can do that. And I can do that once on a ticket. I can, you know, really spread once on a ticket and then spread a little bit elsewhere. But getting back to my point is that as a handicapper, you should identify the races that you think might be eligible to be crazy. and then look, you know, use as many as you possibly can. And if you think it's crazy, and if you've got three races you think are crazy, well, you're going to be up against it, you know. But that's we get weird results. I mean, it's racing.
I don't. That's fine. I don't have any. I don't have an issue with the difficulty factor under normal conditions. What is untoward in this? I mean, and you've heard me, and you and I have kicked it around over these last whatever it is 5 years, 6 years of this rainbow. And you know, I always bring up Chet and the way, you know, Chet was as serious a player as I've gotten to know. And you know, Chet loved it because it was just fun, and he didn't, you know, he wasn't on non-force out days. He was just playing to score, you know, just whatever the daily prize was going to be. So if a guy like that doesn't have objections, you know, that's a bit of a endorsement. But you know, the holding of millions of dollars, $1 million, $1.5 million out of the pools and keeping it, you know, out of circulation and out of the hands of the players, there's something unhealthy about that. And then making the sequence, Johnny, impossible for small people. That I take issue with.
What the difference between what happens at Gulfstream and what happens at Santa Anita is, Santa Anita, it's not difficult enough to make it
good.
You know, yeah, you would like that. But
yeah, this is fine. I mean, what happened on Saturday, and undoubtedly, don't forget, if Nolo Contesto doesn't scratch out of that Lewis, everybody's got to use at least a second horse. If those that say, I singled Mucho Gusto at that point, I'm sure other people went to Mucho Gusto and Gunmetal Gray, and other people would have had to have used three horses. So that would have changed. That's why when who was it that asked me the other day what I thought the pool, Hammer asked me on Friday what I thought the pool might be, and I said, I don't think it'll be as big as you know, some people want to think it's going to be, just because there were some places to go narrow. So it turned out you could go even more narrow in that particular, you know, in the Lewis, and Mucho Gusto had a huge pace advantage under the wet track conditions, you know, that made it difficult to conceive him getting beat.
Yeah. And that's really, gets back to what I said a little bit earlier, is you have to look at these races and say, is there a chance that chaos is going to happen in this race? Not because I want chaos to happen, but in my handicapping, did I go through this race and not like anyone, or did I go through this race and like seven horses? Because at that point, you got to say, man, I got to get as close to the all button as I possibly can, because this is where it's going to happen. And on the other side, you look at a race, you say, oh, geez, you know, this is Baffert, this is the three-year-old, he's got speed, he's at Santa Anita in the slop, he's a single. Because if you go deep, as we say every year, you got to crack some eggs. You can't have them all. If you go deep in one spot, you got to pull up in the other spot, and that's where you get busted up. That's where I got busted up on Saturday, because I went deep early. I caught the 130-1 shot, but I couldn't spread enough. I think I used two. Mythos was the other one, I think. Did I get that name right?
Mm-hmm.
Was the other one that I think I used. And after the race, I kicked. I was, we got to shake these things off, so I moved on. But, you know, I couldn't use more. And maybe I would have gotten to Nick Peake's horse. And that's $21,000 for a 20-cent wager.
Yeah.
That's pretty good payoff. And that's not paying out the pool. Your other point about holding the pool, I think Santa Anita was at, were they at 1.6? Where were they at before when the day began? One point something, I think. I don't think they'd gotten to two yet. And Gulfstream right now is at 1 point something also, maybe 1.5. So when you think about what these major tracks handle on a race by race or a day by day, basis, that's not really that much money. It seems like a lot of money, but it's not really that much money. And then when they have the big payout, well, that's okay, because it's like a one giant pool. You're giving out all of that money. So that's okay. So what I'm saying is, even when the pool gets to 1.5, 1.6 million, the handle for these racetracks, big racetracks, and I understand your point about holding that money for 2 months. I understand it. But in the big scheme of things, it's really not, over 2 months at Santa Anita Gulfstream, $1.5 million is not that much money. It really isn't. You know what I mean? I mean,
I do. Yeah. But when it's being held for, you know, 30 days, 45 days.
It's not that much being held. You know, it has to get up there. It takes a long time to get up there.
I'll tell you what. Now you're inviting a call to Maury Wolf. I'm going to bring in the Wolf, and
no, we'll, he's going to be against it because on paper it makes sense. The paper doesn't make sense. He's going to be against it because he knows what he's talking about. I'm just making stuff up here.
That's pretty good. All right, a couple of other notes. Couple of other things. Had actually a nice Stronach 5 payout that should be noted, a little under 10,000 on Friday, and the tough horse was at Laurel in the opener. That Federal Walk paid $20, and then at Golden Gate you needed to come up with that 7-1 shot in the back end. Otherwise it was three mundanities, including a single, that Gulfstream winner in the Gulfstream 10th, There Goes Bella was a slam dunk at 1-2. Johnny, Beat the Host, some big numbers with two cap horses as part of Beat the Host. How about that? That's the biggest paydays of the sequence.
Oh, by far, easily. I mean, what a huge day. When you have two cap horses in any tournament, you know, your numbers are so inflated. Randy Bird finished first, $262. And that's based on a $5 win mutual payoff, a $5 win bet in eight races, one horse in eight races. So, you know, I used to think you couldn't make any money betting $5 a race, but I guess on certain days you can do all right. Randy Bird, 262. Eric Pryor, second, 233. And Damsire LLC, which is an interesting name.
I went to school. I went to school with Damsire LLC. I got a big kick out of that. I guess this is a corporate account. I don't know. That's pretty funny.
Were there any yearbook photos we should know about?
But I'm bummed. Oh, rim shot. Very good, Johnny.
You said you went to school with him. Randy Bird collects $1,500. Eric Pryor, $750. And Damsire LLC will add $250. to the $218.50 they collected, and that's a nice little payday, excuse me, for $5 win wager in each of eight races. And as you said, Steve, it was a crazy day. There were some short price winners, but the ones that weren't short were cap horses or decent payoffs. Sweep the Host candidates. We're still at 92, which is a monster number when you think about it. Over the years, you and I have talked about this, and there's been times when with 3 weeks remaining, we've been down to like five people in the past, and now there are 92 people hanging out there waiting to sweep the Host. And I'm sure this week's guest will put a stop to this, because he's one of the ones as far as handicap. He's got a tremendous following, and that is the illustrious Ron Nicoletti from Gulfstream Park. He'll shut down. He'll close the door on this Sweep the Host situation.
He'll obviously have plenty of Gulfstream. I leaned a little bit in the Gulfstream direction because of the wet weather, and then still lost a horse with Nolo Contesto scratching. But I went 5-3, to try to take advantage of the better conditions at Gulfstream. And I went against a couple of short priced horses that was stupid. That Omaha Beach all of a sudden woke up in time on Saturday. Wins and got a 90 buyer, we should mention, Omaha Beach. And so Mandela, with a good few days between the Fox Hill runner on Saturday and the winner from Samantha Siegel on Thursday. And there were a few notable. We'll talk about them during the week. There was that Violence filly. Violence is on a roll. All of a sudden, there's a whole bunch of Violence winners. Rudy Brissett via Violencia at Gulfstream on Saturday. And that Pletcher, 88 buyer for Valencia, 91 for Soldado, who ran a big race in the nightcap at Gulfstream on Saturday.
Yeah, it really was an entertaining, and didn't Pletcher win the stake at Aqueduct with a maiden?
Yesterday, yeah. The Rapoli filly won the Busanda Always Shopping. The Awesome Again. Yeah. Awesome Again's 67th stake winner for Awesome Again.
It really was an entertaining weekend. The rain at Santa Anita definitely put a damper on things, but the other thing is, when these sloppy tracks, boy, we've seen some performances, and we've always got to take them with a grain of salt. Because as we explained before, some horses don't mind the slop, and if everybody else hates it, that's going to widen. It's going to widen the distance between them, and you're going to get performances that you're not going to see again. And on any kind of track, when a horse gets an easy lead, they can do things that they can't do when someone's laying on them, hooking them the whole way. It's just a completely different world. And you really have to look at those kinds of races with a grain of salt and be very careful, because you'll see a horse get in front early, you'll see a PP line where a horse is in front early and then widens through the stretch and wins by 10. And you think to yourself, this is a great horse. Well, next time out and you step up, there are a couple horses pressing, the whole picture changes. It's a completely different world.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know if that's the case with Maximum Mischief. I don't know if maybe those races he was just that much better than everybody else. He was quicker than everyone else. Or maybe he's a good horse. I don't know. At this point, but we're going to find out in the Fountain of Youth, and he'll be fitter. So if fitness was the problem, he'll be fitter, and that'll be taken care of. He should show his, as you said, he was kind of just going around there. He didn't show that brilliance that he's shown. Maybe next time he'll show some speed, and actually, at a longer distance, or next time down the road, you might not have so much speed in the race, and it might end up, we saw that happen with Dale Romans last year, right? What was that horse's name? The speed horse.
When the
Florida Stakes race.
Oh my God.
turned out to be running sprints. Ran into
the promises fulfilled.
There you go. And he caught a field that didn't have a lot of speed, and he was able to do something special. That's what makes it fun.
Yeah, it was good.
Harvey Wallbanger might not get a better setup than he got.
He should continue to. He should continue to stretch out okay. This is a horse that in fact, Nick Tamaro is going to join us next. And Nick, with the Game Builder play that we laid out on Friday, Nick covered with Harvey Wallbanger as a C, and you know, wasn't a big hit. You know, got about a 50% on the investment, but we're going to recap it. But you know, we said that if there is a boil over point, that a horse like Harvey Wallbanger could be a beneficiary. And he's a horse that we've been talking about. I got a lot of nice feedback from listeners who were sort of hip to him as an outside candidate. And then when he was, you know, completely forgotten about, you know, from a tote standpoint, I mean, the 30 to 1 was a little silly. I mean, 18 to 1. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the wrong number for sure. Yeah, if you're paying attention, which I wasn't, as I said earlier, if you're paying attention, that number on that horse with the form he has, that is way off. That is way off. So yeah. I mean,
We're going to recap with it. We'll recap it with Vic next. Johnny, be talking to you from Vegas next Monday.
Oh yeah, you're going to hang around the day after the day after the event. Yeah, all right. Well, it's a good town, Steve. I really do wish I was joining you because we met in Vegas at a tournament.
Yes, we did. World Series.
We first met at the World Series, I was listening to Thoroughbred LA radio show on Saturday morning, and I heard the advertisement for the Horse Player World Series, and I kind of got an urge. I said, you know, that'd be a great trip. Go to Vegas, and I like that. I like that 3-day event. It's nice. That'd be a good challenge. And then it's the same weekend as the Florida Derby. I like going to the Florida Derby, so I like going. Yeah. Especially since I missed Pegasus because of
that's right. That's right. That's right. Well, I think I'm working on my schedule. I think Florida Derby and the Florida Sale, I think, is now in the cards for me. So we'll see you there instead.
You're starting a road trip, aren't you? How long is this road trip?
Well, that'll be the March-April trip. There's the February trip now, which is Wednesday till the 24th, the 6th to the 24th. And then the March trip looks like it's the 6th to the 17th. Yeah, till the end. Till Belmont Stakes Day. Listen, that's what this is the life we've chosen. I didn't ask to go on the road. Who gave the order that I go on the road? Johnny, yeah. See you talk next week. XB Johnny D. Nick Tamaro for a couple of minutes. We'll do our game builder recap with Nick.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.